hymn. We've been playing different hymns from the different branches of the service this morning on this Memorial Day. 12th District Alder Henry Perez with me. Good morning. Thanks for coming in on this. We're kind of a little close to that microphone. Thanks for coming in on Memorial Day today.
Thank you, Don.
Everybody's
for the
sleeping,
invitation.
Everybody's sleeping in and got up early.
No, I really appreciate it.
You're a teacher. You're used to that.
Yeah. I get up. I get to school about 6 o'clock every morning and start working on my goals for the day.
My goal is today to be able to make it through the day to get to sleep at night. That's my goal. All right, here's some interesting stats about Memorial Day. Let's do this right now. 25 cities around the country claim to be the birthplace of Memorial Day, but actually it all started in New York in 1873. How can you claim it if it's, I mean, the fact is the fact. It was started in 1873 in New York. 75% of us will go to a barbecue this weekend, the second most popular holiday for grilling. The first one is, what's the most popular holiday? 4th of July.
4th of July, yeah, 4th of July.
Between now and Labor Day, Americans will eat 7 billion hot dogs. That's all of us together, by the way. 818 hot dogs every second.
Wow.
Be careful out there. 25% bump in cooker-related fires on Memorial Day. About 50,000 people will be injured in car accidents this weekend. 44% in traffic fatalities will involve alcohol. And 42 million veterans have served in wartime. A total of 1.3 million Americans have lost their lives defending the United States. That is an important statistic, remembering them, because that's what Memorial Day is all about. During the Vietnam War, I had a good friend of mine, Steve Van Cott. And when we were taking, he went to high school with me. We wanted to get our licenses first. So we went to driver's ed. And it wasn't at our high school. It was at another high school. So we had to walk there every day. And I met him at his house, and we walked every single day. Rain, sun, didn't make a difference because he wanted to go to driver's ed. He got his license, graduated high school, was killed in Vietnam. I mean, within a year and a half, all that happened. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. This guy I walked to school with, you know, to driver's ed every single day. We had a pizza every day at the end of driver's ed, and here he was. He had signed up, and he was killed, like, shortly after we joined there. So to Steve Van Cott and everybody else who gave their lives for our country, we do appreciate it very much. And I hope people on Memorial Day think about that for a few minutes. I know the barbecue. It's okay to have barbecues. Yeah. I can't bring myself to say happy Memorial Day.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. I think about that, too, a lot of time. I've had several people tell me, happy Memorial Day. And I'm thinking, well, it's a sad occasion. It's not
this
happy.
Yeah, right. This is,
and of course, we're thankful that the freedoms that we have in this country now were brought about by our veterans and especially those who passed away. And me as a naturalized citizen coming from a communist nation, I really appreciative of their sacrifice so that I could have a life here in the U.S.
And all these people that gave their lives in Afghanistan and Iraq, we don't think about them. We think of World War II, World War I, Korean War, Vietnam. But Afghanistan, people gave their lives. I mean, we weren't at war per se, but they still gave their lives defending our freedoms and what we stand for. And it's just, I just cry when I see those caskets come home.
Yeah, we're really humbled by their sacrifices for us.
I mean, they had their whole lives ahead of them and they said, all right, I'm going to give up my life so you can enjoy yours. And that's a big thing to do. Yeah. A lot of people wouldn't do that. Stand in the way of a bullet so I can have freedom. They knew what they were getting into. They knew they may not be coming home. I mean, you try your best to come home, but I don't know. I feel so sad on this day. So when I get out today, we're going to Union Grove at 9 o'clock for the Memorial Day ceremony. The local American Legion post does it every year. And they pick a different veteran who passed away during the war. My father-in-law, he was a U.S. Marine, but he didn't die in the war. But they honor, if they don't have somebody, you know, they then honor a veteran that day. They do a gun salute and they have, they play taps. Local high school has got a bugler who plays taps. Very good, by the way. And so we do that every year. So we're off to Union Grove at 9 o'clock. You go out to Graceland, right?
And
what's your lineup today?
Today, I'm going to be doing the opening invocation and I'm going to be doing the closing blessing. It's going to be at 11 o'clock at Graceland Park Cemetery. 10 o'clock, the parade starts on West Boulevard and Highway 20. And you're all welcome to do that right after the parade. It'll be done by 11, so we plan on starting at 11 for the Memorial Day ceremony for Racine County.
Yeah, how big the parade is in Union Grove?
How big is it?
It's over in 30 seconds. They march down from the high school to the cemetery in Union Grove, and there's only like 12, 13 people in the whole parade. They used to have the high school band, but they stopped doing it years ago. So it's real quick, down and dirty. Boom. it's over with, and then they do the ceremony is what you want to see anyway. But that's what Memorial Day is all about. Now, you, on the other hand, are involved in a lot of things. I got a whole bunch of questions to ask you. not you, but you as an alderperson, I want to ask, you know, just because you hang around there so long. How long have you been an alderman?
I'm the longest serving alderman, continually serving alderman right now. I started in 2013. So I've been elected 7 times. And again, I have to start running for re-election pretty soon.
I thought you were going to say, oh, I was elected in 2006.
Not quite.
Okay. And you enjoy it?
I do. The fact that I can help people and the people know to call on me when the city is what they believe not treating them fairly makes a huge difference to me. As a pastor, my life career goal has always been to help people. As a police officer, that was always my goal. And so when people call on me to help them resolve their issues, especially with the city, I get great enjoyment out of that.
I was going to say something there. Now I forgot what I was going to say. I guess it's not important. I forgot. You get a lot of people contacting you when you're trying to relax and enjoy yourself, and they come up to you. Hey, Alder, I got this pothole in front of my house. There's a crack in the street, and every time I hit it, I break an axle. What are you going to do about it?
It happens a lot.
Not with a New York accent.
Not that much.
And it'll do with a New York accent.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen that much?
No, it doesn't happen that much. Well, I'm in the 12th District, which is actually right here where Radio Park is.
Oh, good. And we got a complaint for you.
Yeah, no, we don't. I think I've handled some of the complaints, actually, here for Radio Park. And our neighborhood is actually pretty good. We don't have a lot of those issues. And so there are phone calls, which I try to resolve right away. And I always ask people to leave me a message so I can try to figure out the details before I call them back with an answer. And a lot of times, for example, I've been successful at setting up the traffic controls over at Starbucks School, which they were having issues with, and also at Graceland School when that was part of my district before it got rezoned. And I'm very thankful that we can actually help the kids. The kids are a big, you know, they're our future here in town. And so we have to make sure that they're safe and that they can do the right thing in society. And that's why I concentrate and focus on trying to help the community, trying to help the kids, especially as a pastor and as a teacher and as a former police administrator, police officer, police administrator.
That's right. You were in the police force, yeah.
Yeah. 18 years in Miami.
Yeah.
I've been
That's a rough place to be a police officer.
It was in the 80s, too, is when I started, which was really rough. Yeah. The Metro-Dade Police Department, where I first started, was actually in some kind of gunfight every day. So it was very interesting.
A lot of drug dealing down there.
A lot of Colombian drug dealers was a big thing at the time.
Think of the movie Scarface with Al Pacino. That's what I picture back in the 80s in Miami.
I actually met a guy who modeled his life after Scarface, ended up arresting him.
Tony Montana.
Yeah, it wasn't Tony, but some guy who modeled his life. And we ended up searching his house, and my partner leaned on a refrigerator box. The refrigerator box leaned over, and money started coming out of it. And there was $3 million in this refrigerator box. It's the only thing we could find in the house at the time. And then he got indicted. And what was interesting about that is that the squad that came to investigate actually ended up stealing $1.5 million of that, and they all got indicted. And it was quite an interesting experience down in Miami. We had a lot of corruption all the way around.
Now, you're working on, it's called Snapshots on Safety in Brasham County. It has to do with gun safety, and including for kids. We have been very fortunate here in Racine and the whole southeast Wisconsin area. I mean, it seemed like for a while, every month, there was some kid with a gun in a school shooting up the place. And we've been fortunate not to have it here. But wherever it is, people say, well, it never happens in a place like this. Well, it does happen in a place like that. It can happen everywhere. You got some kid who's got a grudge and access to a gun, and he'll kill people with it. They don't have the sense to know you're ending a life. And then with that, you're ending your own life because you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life. And you're probably ending your parents' lives because they'll be held responsible. I mean, it's a big thing, but you're offering gun safety to kids. Now, you say kids, we're talking about how old?
Oh, we're talking about starting at about 9 years old.
Really?
Yeah. We found that kids have access to guns when the parents don't control it properly. For example, one of the simplest things you can do is put your guns in a safe. There's biometric safes. There's push-dot safes that you can open right away for access. And parents don't realize there's gun locks that you can put through the barrel so that it can't shoot. And
yeah, but if you need it in a hurry.
Well, the biometric one and the push dots work right away.
Yeah.
The gun lock actually needs a key, but you can keep it handy. And the city of Racine will actually give you a gun lock, the police department, for your guns at home. So we're trying to do a service that way to the community. A couple of years ago, I had I was teaching, and I had a kid shoot a gun in the bathroom next door to my classroom. And that really reminded me of the importance of this. I'm a nationally certified firearms instructor with the United States Concealed Carry Association. And we do work and have a program specifically designed for kids. I want to put on a program this summer for kids. And I've had some volunteers already call me and say they wanted to be part of that. Part of it is going to be the trauma, the physical trauma. So I have a nurse, Renee Beck Santiago, who has offered to help me. Actually, she's a PA. I'm really excited about this. We have a couple of people who have said they would sponsor part of the program. We're looking for a date that works for everybody right now, but we're going to do part of the program from United States Concealed Carry Association, some other programs, but especially we're going to focus on gun safety.
I've never held a gun in my life. I've never even had it in my hand. I would be terrified to hold a gun. My wife wanted one for her birthday. This is when COVID just hit, and she worked for the Caledonia Police Department for several years. But she wasn't a sworn officer. She was a dispatcher. So I contacted one of the officers she used to work with, and he said, well, I'll go down to the store and help you get one because I can get it as a gift because I don't know anything about them. And so COVID hit, and the stores were closed, and we didn't wind up doing it. But she wanted one. She wanted to learn how to shoot because in the police department, she just never had access to it. She just never did it. I just never shot one before. I would be terrified. And I don't know if my life depended on it, if I can take a life. I told you I have a bug thing at home.
Right.
Where we don't kill bugs in our house.
Right.
We capture them and, you know, sing Born Free and let them out the door. I don't know if I could take a life. I can't even take the life of a bug.
Well, you'll find that when it's between you and another person, life is important.
People say that.
React that way.
But I just don't think I could take a human life. I don't know. I don't know if I, you know, when I was in the military draft, I was in the, when they were calling off the birthdays, you know, the lottery. And I said, I don't know if I can kill somebody if I have to go into the military. I don't know if I could take a life.
Sure.
And they said the same thing. When the gun's aimed at you,
yeah,
you'll do it. I don't know if I could do it.
Well, I think we recognize that life is sacred, and that's why we have to be prepared. And we have to be prepared with knowledge. We have to be prepared with action if necessary. The important thing and the most important thing always is to try to de-escalate. I mean, that's always the first thing. We're teaching now. I'm a Alice instructor and a I Love You Guys instructor. So it's a program design which is basically run away from the situation, hide if you can, and fight if you must.
That's me, run away.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's a good strategy because if you're not there, you're not going to be involved in that gunfight.
I was in one fight in my entire life on this planet, one fight, and it was in sixth grade in grammar school. A kid named Mickey Strange, who was a friend of mine, one day turned on me. He said he told all the kids he's going to take care of me on the playground after we get it done. So I step out of school, and there's the entire school is waiting. He's leaning against the fence. And I said, all right. And I charged him as fast as I could, and I just body slammed him against the chain link fence.
Sure.
He fell down. He was out of breath, and he started crying and walked away. That's it. But I didn't hit him. I just charged him.
Right.
And knocked him off his feet, and he wasn't prepared. He expected me, you know, bobbing and weaving with him. I didn't do that. And that's the only time in my entire life I was in a fight with somebody. I tried to de-escalate. I had people come up to me and, you know, threaten me. De-escalate. One reason is I don't want to lose a tooth. I don't want to break a nose. I don't want to lose an eye.
And that's very important. I mean, and that's the first thing. Guns always have to be your very last resort where you have no other option. But we teach that, and we teach the parents the proper storage, the mechanics of it, so they're familiar with it if something happens.
Nine-year-olds grasp what a gun is, and when you use it, sometimes there's no turning back. Do
right.
You grasp that concept?
Well, we have to start training so that they do. I mean, we teach them math, we teach them spelling, we teach them reading. We need to teach them gun safety right away in the morning. I've written a gun safety cartoon book for my grandkids that I'm trying to publish right now. And it has to do with finding a gun in the park, making sure it's covered, going, asking for help, not touching it. And those are, that's part of the story involved in that story. It's Bernie the Moose Dog and his adventures, by the way. I have a whole series that I'm working on right now.
And these kids who find a gun in their homes and they go to the high school because somebody called them a name and now they're going to kill everybody in the high school, everybody get their hands on. For that kid to get the gun, it couldn't have been in the safe.
Right.
Unless he knew the combination to it and he shouldn't know it.
Right.
So the parents are now accountable.
Oh, absolutely. We definitely hold the parents accountable if that happens. Actually, the law says that if you're 14 years old or less and you have access to a gun and commit a crime, the parents are held legally responsible for that. At the age of 14, the kid is held responsible. But the parents are held, according to Wisconsin law, from 14 and under.
You know, my father, for 4 years during World War II, he was a tail gunner. And so he did all day. He sat in the turret and shot planes down and strafed ships. That's all he did. He killed people every day. That's what he did. And I asked him once, I said, would you ever get a gun? He said, never.
Yeah.
4 years of killing people with guns. I said, I'll never, ever touch a gun. And, you know, I can understand it, you know.
Yeah, it's very traumatic both ways. If you do the killing or if you're shot at. I've been shot at twice since I've been in Wisconsin working security. Mm. And the last time my wife's like, Henry, you're getting too old for this. You need to stop. I'm like, yeah. So now I do training and I do private security.
Yeah.
But I also do church safety consulting and nonprofit consulting. So if you have a
That's another thing.
I'd be more than happy to do that for
synagogues,
you.
Synagogues, churches.
Yeah.
I mean, they all get, they have nuts coming in there.
Yeah. Church safety is the fastest growing crime in the world right now. Church-related safety.
Yeah. Just the other day, I mean, this guy was going to bomb a synagogue, and they found out beforehand, and they got him. Luckily, they found out beforehand, because they brag about it, and people turn him in. Just want to remind people that what this day is all about. 52% of Americans think Memorial Day's lost its original meaning. Only 60% say remembering America's fallen troops is the first thing they associate with it now. But 40%, that's not the first thing. Now, it's okay to associate it with barbecues, the beginning of summer, and the three-day weekend that we have. Just make sure you take time, if it's just a few minutes, to honor the fallen soldiers as well. And you're going to do that today. Henry, is it Alderman or Alder? You don't mind? Okay. Alder Henry Perez is going to... He's in here right now. And you're going to be doing a ceremony at Graceland today for the
Yes, I am. It's, okay. I'm going to be doing the invocation and the benediction for the Memorial Day ceremony that's being put on to honor our veterans that have passed away, especially those during their service.
Yeah, I'm going to head out to Union Grove. The American Legion does a whole big ceremony out there. And we do there every year because my father-in-law is buried out there. I am going to be buried in that cemetery. We went out yesterday to clean the gravesite and, you know, fix it up a little bit. And we just drive by. I said, I want to see if anybody moved into our site yet. We got four graves over there. And just make sure nobody's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, well, what are you going to do if they're there? I'm going to dig them up and get them out. They don't put them somewhere else. I hate to bring this up. It was amazing. The other day on the news, they were showing a funeral at a church.
Yeah.
And the pallbearers are bringing the casket out to put into the hearse. The bottom falls out of the casket.
Oh, no.
And the body falls on the steps of the church.
That's
and the pallbearers are standing there in shock. What do we do?
What do you do, right?
They're like frozen. They don't know what to do. And there's the body with the bottom just laying there on the church steps. What do you do?
Fortunately, I've never had that happen to me.
I never want to see it happen.
I've officiated many funerals.
Oh,
but that,
man.
That would be
How does that even happen?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so you're in here today. We're talking about all the safety programs you have. And let's continue with that. We talked about gun safety, but there's what's the program you're doing with the Racine County Eye?
Well, this is a very interesting. Denise, who runs Racine County
Eye. Denise Lockwood, she's in here all the time. Yeah,
she's in here. She was in here not too long ago.
Yeah.
She's very great with me. And whenever I submit something, she usually publishes it. And I started submitting what I call snapshots on safety because I saw issues that needed to be addressed in the community. And she's published 10 of them. And so I have a series with them called Snapshots on Safety. All you have to do is search snapshots on Racine County Eye or my name. And if you Google my name on their site, a whole lot of stuff comes up. So I recommend just snapshots and safety.
Mugshots, police records.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Indictments, everything comes up. No.
Well, being an alderman, I get in the news a lot. So, and she's very good at reporting stuff like that. She's permitted me to contribute to her website and to the news. And I'm really thankful because it gives me an opportunity to share some of my expertise. And so I've written 10 things to look out for in the community. And a lot of times when I see something going on in the community, I'll do some research if I don't know, and I'll do some basic tips. And of course, these are not the all in all, but they're conversation starters. Get to know what's going on. These are some issues to help you think through what's going on in your life. So I've done snapshots on gun safety, on fall safety, fall not falling down, but fall the season, Halloween, personal safety, home safety, back to school safety, jogging safety, and school bus safety.
You know, you mentioned all those things, and while you're mentioning them, I could think of stories I heard in the news where somebody was hurt or killed because they weren't following those. You got the buses. You've got sure. There was a huge bus accident, and I just saw the video again the other day on YouTube, right by Rapids Drive. Do you remember that? A city bus rammed over and knocked over a school bus. Did you ever see that video?
No, I didn't see the video.
Oh, man, it's terrifying to see. There were no kids in it. It was an empty bus, yeah. But with the driver. But it, I don't know who was at fault. I just saw the video, and it's, like, shocking to see. But you hear these stories about school buses, and, you know, people get into accidents. Mm-hmm. But when you're dealing with kids, and there's no seatbelts in school buses.
Oh, no, there are. There are seatbelts in school buses. The kids just don't use them.
I heard there are none because if there's an emergency, you can't unbuckle 50 kids that quickly. So you've got to have them out of the seats and out the back if there's a problem. I've never seen a school bus. They have them now, seatbelts?
Yeah, they have seatbelts. Actually, the seatbelts are, the buses are designed so that the law enforcement officer responding to the scene can know where things are. For example, the black line that goes across the bus is actually where the seats are.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Different levels of markings on the bus. There's an emergency way that you can get in from the outside.
Are we supposed to know this, or are you just telling us this for the first time? I never heard of this before.
Yeah, well, first responders are aware of it. Maybe the community is not, because they're not too concerned with that. They're more concerned of getting their kids out of the, you know, safely onto the bus and onto school. But, you know, school bus safety is really interesting because a lot of people don't know many times when to stop when the flashing stop sign is on, or where the red light is on. And actually Caledonia or Sturtevant has a little different rule on that here in town when the lights are on. So naturally you're supposed to stop, give them room. I leave about three or four car spaces behind the bus so that I can see around it and see if there's kids moving around it as well. Yeah. It gives me scope of vision so I can be extra careful. And, you know, kids are going to be kids. They're going to be running. They're going to be careless. They're going to be playing with each other. There might be chasing a ball. So you really just can't depend on the stop sign that the bus puts out. You have to look at the environment that's around you and make sure that it's safe as you move forward from moving from the bus.
I only took a bus for a half year in kindergarten, maybe with a full year. Because other than that, I live close enough to the schools. I didn't think so. When you're walking in the rain, it seems like 20 hours you're walking. But Mr. Clancy was our bus driver. This is way back in 1960. He was our bus driver. And he's the nicest guy, but he had rules on that bus.
Yeah, sure.
And when he turned around and gave you the eye, the side eyes or whatever, that bus was quiet. Everybody was in their seat. He was a volunteer fireman. He taught us about the whistles that blew in our town, what they meant. And he was a good guy. But he was dead serious. When that bus is moving, you sit in your seat. You could talk, but do not get out of your seat.
It's very important.
And there were no seat belts. Yeah. And there were no of those signs that come out. Those didn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
But never forgot Mr.
You're
Clancy.
You're that old, Tom?
Thank you. But Mr. Clancy, I never forgot that guy. And it was the only bus driver I had in my life.
Well, you know, we think of the big yellow buses, but there's actually white buses, small buses, special education buses, daycare vans, and just regular people transporting their children back and forth, you know, cars picking up the
kids. Right, the daycare vans, too, yeah.
So, and some of them don't have the appropriate signage. So you have to really be careful when you're around those type of buses. Because if you're not careful, there's a good probability, not possibility, but probability, that you're going to be putting kids in danger, and yourself, for that matter.
It just galls me when that red sign is out and people just driving past the bus.
Oh, yeah.
How'd you get a driver's license? That's on the test. I know it's on the test because I remember it on the test. How did you pass that test and pass that sign?
Well, I think a lot of times people are confused when there's a median and when there isn't a median.
Yeah, but you're driving right next to the bus.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about somebody on the other side. I'm talking about the guy driving past it. He's behind the bus, just gets around it. Yeah, the median thing is kind of confusing. If there's a boulevard
right, where
there's a... Now, you don't have to stop if there's a boulevard, like a
median. If there's a median, you don't have to stop.
Right.
But if there's no median you're six lanes across, you got to stop.
Yeah, and I don't see people doing that.
Yeah.
Well, District Alder Henry Perez is with me here. We're talking about safety issues, safety for joggers. And this is the jogging season coming up. Although I see people jogging in the winter. I don't get it, but I do see them jogging in the winter. So this is the jogging season. People out very early in the morning and a lot of people going to work at that hour in a rush because they are late for whatever reason. And the joggers, you know, you're supposed to stop and follow the stop signs, the street lights and everything else. So let's talk about that, jogger safety.
Yeah, jogger safety, that's very important. You know, when you're jogging down the street, a couple of things could happen to you. You could get, unfortunately, you can get hit by a car, which is very dangerous. But it's also, because of the crime, you know, you could be attacked, harassed. So you need to make a plan. You need to make a predetermined emergency plan, right? So jogging safety isn't the only place where an emergency plan is available. It should have your name, your address, your date of birth, your physical measurements, your hair color, fingerprint or DNA, hair or saliva, sample of something that the police could use for positive identification if they need to investigate. But something that's really important and people forget, make sure that others know where you are. When you're going to leave the house, let your family or friends know that your intention, what your intention is and how long you intend to be gone. Having others you know and trust is very valuable in case something would possibly happen to you. Don't be deceived. There are people everywhere with evil intent. So make sure your friends or family know where you're going, what your route will be, and how long you intend to be away. Let your friend know your route. Pick a designated space along your route where you get to know someone and make a friend. In case there's an emergency, you may need to be able to stop at their house to get help instead of going all the way back home. Use or carry with you a flashlight, which you can use not only if you're jogging at night, but early morning, reflective clothing. The flashlight you can also use as a weapon because most of them have bevels on the top and you can hit somebody with it and it'll pick up their DNA. I recommend pepper spray or pepper gel, and you can easily find that at Walmart and some of the other sports stores as well. Keep a knife or a tactical pen on you. Knives are legal to carry in Wisconsin. That's not an issue. And a tactical pen actually writes, but has a pointed end on one end that you can hit somebody with it and break a window if you need to. And a fanny pack with your personal identification. And use technology. Don't close yourself off from the real world. Track yourself. Let others know where they can track you. Be a tracker. And one important thing, too, that always people forget, people wear ear pods all the time, right? So one of the things you need to do is wear just one instead of both
so
that
you can hear
traffic.
Yeah.
And people forget about that, and that's such a simple thing. If you don't hear something coming at you because you're too focused on running and hearing what you're listening to, that can be very dangerous as well.
This is some tactical thing you have here. You need like one of those police vests that come out like 40 feet with all this stuff to jog with.
Well, not really. I mean...
My wife, when she goes out on the lakefront, she has a whistle with her.
Yeah.
And she has a little thing of something around. I don't know what it is.
So the whistle serves two purposes. If you fall down and can't get up, you can blow the whistle. People come looking for you. If you fall down while you're walking and you're down in a ditch or something, that's a way to notify people. Other than that, the whistle is really good for pretty much just that. I always carry a whistle on my key ring just for reasons like that.
People attacking you don't like attention, and whistles bring attention.
Well, that's the whole idea. Yeah. But if you're in danger, you want attention. So
right. But the bad guys don't want the attention.
Right.
They don't like horns honking. They don't like.
Sure.
Let's talk about home safety in the last few minutes here.
Sure. Home safety. Now, this is one of the things that are most important. Most of us live in a home or an apartment building. And these are some safety tips that are really important. I'll give you 10 quick ones. Get an alarm sign. Post it in your yard, even if you don't have one. It actually works. Most criminals would rather go to a house that may not have a sign in front of it than go to one that does. And if you can afford it, get a real alarm. You know, that's a simple. Have one that's monitored if you can. place surveillance cameras wired as preferred to Wi-Fi, because Wi-Fi can easily be distracted or interfered with through movement. Install lighting around the exterior of your house, not only for your own property so you can see out, but if law enforcement has to come on your property, they want to be able to see around the curtilage of your house as well. Get strong windows, but remember that you want plants underneath the ledge. You want to leave 6 inches of space between the ledge of your window and your plant. And you want your plant to be something that has spikes on it, like roses or something, because if someone's trying to break in, they will get cut, and then you'll have DNA evidence as well. And that's really, keep any tools that you have around the outside that can be used to break a window. Keep them in the garage if you can, or in a shed. Make sure that you look around your yard, or remove any objects that can be used to break into a house. And something very important, most crimes occur with people walking into your front door or your garage door. Keep it locked and secure. And additionally, remember to do that also as well with your windows. Get a peephole. If you're going out of town, cancel your mail and your newspaper. Put it on hold. You might even get credit for it. And have a plan. Have a plan in your house where you're going to go if there's a crisis, who you're going to contact. Keep a flashlight in every room in case there's bad weather like we had just a couple of weeks ago and the power goes out.
Here's something else I heard a while ago. They said, sleep with your key fob for your car on your nightstand. And if you hear somebody near the house, hit the horn on the key. Because the horn will scare them and they'll go away.
Well, we hope they'll go away.
Well, if I heard a horn, like right in front of me, I think I'd... Again, they don't want attention. Horns bring attention. People start in the middle of the night, people start turning on their lights and looking out the windows. Now, who's the idiot who's got their horn going? And you hear that, and it keeps going.
And that alarms other people as well. So they all go look at their windows. Right. They look at the Ring cameras, their surveillance videos. And that way it can be a very important safety feature.
We have one of those, what do they call those? Things that you put on your steering wheel. I forget the club. Name. The club. Yeah, we have one of those. And if you watch the YouTube video on it, the guy says, put it in such a way where they could see it in the window.
Absolutely.
Don't put it in the way where they can't. You want them to see it.
Right.
Once they see the club,
it's a preventive measure. Absolutely.
Right. Even if you don't have it locked on, they see it and they know they can't steer the wheel and they move on to some other guy. You don't want some other car to get burglarized, but you don't want your car.
We had a funny story that when I was in a state attorney investigator in Miami, we were all assigned the clubs because they kept stealing our cars. And so once we got the club, we had no more cars stolen.
Yeah, I have this one back from my original Camaro, which I got back in the 70s.
Sure.
And it's a big, thick one, not like the thin ones they have today. And you put it on there, and you just make sure the person walking by, make sure they can see it.
Right.
And they'll pass your car.
And you want the angle of the top part of the club towards your window, on the other side.
We keep it, it's between the window and the front window. It's locked in there, so you can't even turn the wheel.
That's the whole idea.
If you wanted to, you couldn't do it. And just don't lose the key. we have two of them just in case one of us loses it. I thank you for coming in on this Memorial Day holiday today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me, Don. Anytime, be more than happy to come back on the show.
And you teach it during the daytime, though.
I do. I teach dual language special ed at Gerstead Middle School.
Yeah.
6th, 7th, and 8th grade, Spanish and English.
It's a rough age.
It is. For sure it is. We've done a great job at school this year. I'm a notary public, and I usually notarize their paperwork for expulsions and stuff like that. I haven't even had to do too many this year. We've really come a long way.
Good for you, my friend.
Yeah, thank you so much.
12th District Alder Henry Perez, you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, brother, and blessings to you and the hearing community out there.
Thank you very much. All right, it's 8 o'clock on the nose. Let's do the news. Let's do it. Local news and timeless hits, WRJN, Racine, Kenosha.